These are the Kashi Tapes. U-Man and Favaz explore the backstories and interviews heard on Kashi, the longest-running rock station in the country.
And welcome to the Kashi Tapes podcast. I'm John Hewlett.
I'm Favaz.
And today we're going to do an interview that I did back in 1980 with Justin Hayward of the Moody Blues. And it's not just an interview. He came in and he did the lunch show with me, as I think we featured Moody Blues music.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and he sat in there for a while, so this could be rather lengthy. I don't know. We'll see how long it goes.
Yeah, I just love his voice, man. His voice is spot on. Concert.
Yeah.
Recorded. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. I barely remember this happening. And if I wouldn't have run across this tape, I would have totally forgotten that it even happened.
Right, right.
So we'll see how it goes. Again, 1980. Man,
42 years ago.
42 years ago. And the tape, this tape has been sitting in this box and in various basements at my house for that long.
It's unreal.
And I've never listened back to it. I have no idea what I'm going to run into here.
You know, I wonder what album he was promoting.
It was a solo album, 1980. And this was August 28th, 1980.
Okay. Oh, you even know, because the date's written on there.
One of the few good record-keeping things I did on my tapes.
Okay, go ahead. Start it up. We'll go.
This is KSHE-95, and you just heard new music from RAF, and the name of the song is Give Me a Little Time Before...
RAF. I remember RAF. Royal Air Force, something
wow,
around there.
Wow, I don't remember that band at all.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
At Uriah Heep. It's 15 after 12, and we are now going to begin our lunch program. After these words, Justin Hayward has just entered the studio, and we'll talk with Justin and listen to music from the Moody Blues, and also music from Justin's new solo LP, after these words.
So, his new solo LP, but Moody Blues also had, in 1981, Long Distance Voyager come out.
That was 81.
Yeah, 81. Okay, this is 82, you
no,
said?
No, this is 80.
This is 80.
Yeah,
they had nothing in 80.
They were working on the new album, Long Distance Voyager, and... What was the solo album? Do you see in his solo?
No, I don't have his solo stuff. I just have Moody Blues.
Central Hardware.
And the sideshow.
Central Hardware.
Well, this evening at 6 o'clock features side two of the new LP from Gamma. It's called Gamma 2. Join Kenny Suter for that again at 6 o'clock. The sideshow, Kashi Sideshow. In the studio with me right now, Justin Hayward of the Moody Blues. And Justin, with a solo career now, which has been a few years now. You've been doing the solo thing a while.
I've been doing, my first solo album was out in 77, and then I did the thing with an album called The War of the Worlds with Jeff Wayne, who produced this new, the new Night Flight album.
Right. War of the World has, that's the song with Forever Autumn.
Forever,
yes.
Love that song, yep.
Hit came up for that too.
Yeah, that's right, song called Forever Autumn, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is still going, actually, different places around the world, I'm amazed to say. Still in the charts in Australia, and it's been in the charts in England now for 2.5 years, which I find amazing.
And I understand that Knights in White Satin, the song that you wrote, has made an amazing comeback in
UK. Yeah, it has. Yeah, it's the third time it got to number 4 over there, just before Christmas, this last Christmas gone, which is the third time it's been in the top 10. It's quite amazing.
Wow, is that amazing? Yeah.
And who would have thought years later that you would make, a Kashi parody of that, Knights at White Castle.
Yeah, that would probably have been about 9 years later.
Yeah.
The original version, that's not a remake.
The original version that was first released on November the 11th, 1967.
That's fantastic. Have any other songs ever done that?
No, I don't think so. I remember all the statisticians looking it up, and they found Rock Around the Clock had come back a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
But, I think it's just one of those songs, it's obviously... means a lot to a lot of people, it's a personal feeling for a lot of people, and it seems a whole new generation discovers it each time.
Now, that's interesting, because I would say now, especially on rock stations like KSHE-95, that song doesn't get played anymore.
No.
And there was a time, and I mentioned this maybe in another podcast or somewhere, the trifecta of ultimate rock classics was Freebird, Leonard Skinner, Layla, Derek and the Dominoes, and Knights in White Satin by the Moody Blues.
Hmm.
But since rock radio got harder, I guess, because we don't play as much mellow stuff, that song, for whatever reason, of the three of them, has faded. After being number 1 3 times on some charts.
Where does Stairway to Heaven fit?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one, too, to think about. But, wow, yeah.
And it was a chart, right? Yeah, that would have been 4. That would have been the Mount Rushmore. Yeah, Mount Rushmore songs.
Definitely a test of time song.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And plus it came out at a time when things were kind of topsy-turvy in this whole
US of A.
And maybe that has a lot to do with the
yeah, I mean, we were talking to someone about programming yesterday, and I said, my God, that, you know, like, if you'd have been around when Nights in White Setting came out, because that was, everybody said, oh, no, it's too slow, it's too long, it's 4.5 minutes long, mm-hmm. No, it'll never make a hit record. And they actually released something else here. They released a song called Tuesday Afternoon from the same album here first. Mm-hmm. And then Nights was the second single, and then slowly began to make it, you know.
I'll bet you faced that a lot back in those days when people would come to you and say, no, this is too slow and this is too slow, because it was a rock and roll era, definitely.
That's right, yeah. Well, we've always believed in making music and trusting our own judgment and music that we believed in. Fortunately, we were lucky to have the studio time and the freedom to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did. They stuck to their guns. I mean,
it's obvious they did.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. There's nobody that sounds like the Moody Blues. You know,
mm-hmm. Let's listen to some Moody Blues music. What's the name of your group again?
And that young and talented English group.
Exactly. We're in the middle of lunch.
Yeah.
So let's sit
this
back and listen. Okay. This is Takeshi.
Okay. We can't play music here. So
can't play.
I have no idea what I was talking to him about when the music was playing. I mean, it's kind of strange just sitting across the table from somebody like that. But maybe he was taking calls. I don't know.
You're tuned to KC Radio, and we're in the middle of lunch today. Justin Hayward is our guest live in the studio. We're playing Moody Blues music today. And also, we'll get into Justin Hayward's new solo LP. Today's lunch program is brought to you by St. Louis Photo.
St. Louis Photo invites you to a Zebrachrome color printing demonstration this weekend. It's easy and fun to print your own color slides, and this weekend at St. Louis Photo, Zebrachrome representative Alan Gelman will be on hand to show you just how...
I hear he's very good.
Yeah, how much fun color printing
can
be.
What if he's alive?
Yeah, really. St. Louis Photo, are they even in business anymore?
I don't think so.
Probably not.
I don't think so.
You've read about it. Now,
okay, we're back with Justin Hayward. And the last LP by the Moody Blues, Justin.
Octave. Yeah.
I've heard it pronounced many different ways. Octave, Octave.
Yeah. We were never quite sure. Seventh Sojourn was the worst one to pronounce, whether it should be Sojourn or Sojourn. Or
really?
What.
I can't imagine that. That's
well,
what I never had
maybe
problem
straightforward
with
here in St. Louis.
Really? But that obviously was the last LP by the band.
Yeah.
And to you, did it have a different sound from things of the past?
I think it did. I could see a change coming, you know. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of it was due to the things that we'd done on our own. We needed to be on our own. I mean, I was quite choked when the band split in 1974, I must say, because we...
He was quite choked.
...seemed to be right at the top then.
And I was chafed.
Crazy at that time. But looking back now, it was the best thing, because I think if we'd have stayed together another year after that, we could have split never to come back together again.
How did that develop, the split?
We'd been on the road for about 2 years. A lot of commitments had caught up with us, and we started into a long world tour, which lasted nearly 2 years. And I think, in the end, we'd been together about 10 years before that, and we'd been sitting in the back of the same van together, you know, mm-hmm. and I'd been to the same place as everyone else. You knew what everyone was going to say before they were saying it, you know, somebody'd only have to say, do you remember when? And you'd say, yeah, that's right, yeah, oh, yeah, I remember that. Well, that, you know, everybody knew.
Now, that makes a good radio team, if you can do that kind of stuff, but when it comes to a band like that, I guess it's not good.
Everything about everybody else. And I think we needed some time away from each other to put our own lives in order, work with other musicians, and just do different things, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was very healthy. Also, within a year of the split, fortunately, there was never one of those big rows where things got said which couldn't be unsaid, you know. Mm-hmm. Like I never said, oh, I never want to see you lot again.
Exactly.
And all that. We just drifted apart. And within a year after that, we already knew that we were going to come back together, which made it very hard when we were being interviewed, because the first question anybody'd say was, are the Moody Blues going to get back together? And we knew very well that they were, mm-hmm. but nobody was actually going to say yes until we had that tape of Octave in our hands.
I could always remember the rumors, though. The rumors were there. The Moody Blues are getting back together. The Moody
That's
Blues.
Right. Yeah.
But you never actually said it. They were just rumors.
No.
But
no.
You wanted to say it.
We wanted to say it because we knew. We knew, like, 18 months up front of recording Octave, when we were going to do it, where we were going to do it, and how, you know,
a
whole bit.
When you got back together and you got on stage for the first time again, where was that, by the way?
It was in Germany. It was actually in Nuremberg in Germany, the first date we did together.
And you got back. Was there a lot of pressure? I mean, you had something to live up to. You had a past to live up to. And people have been waiting a long time for the show. Review, anybody who wrote for anybody was probably there in the audience.
That's right, yeah.
Was there a lot of pressure?
Well, fortunately, we'd had Octave had come out about 6 months before that, and it had done very well, and we're still doing very well at that time. Mm-hmm. And but always in the back of our minds, we were thinking, you know, like, is it going to be as big as it was before, and and are we going to be received, and are they going to remember the stuff and everything? And actually, it was better. It was better than ever before. It seems like what people can't have for a while, they want even more. You know, it's crazy. And it's even the audience seemed to be wider. When we came over here, we had a new keyboard player, a guy called Patrick Mraz. He's the one changing.
Patrick Mraz.
Wow, that's a big name there.
Yeah, he was. I think he played with Yes for a while, didn't he?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
and he's excellent. Added a whole new dimension to the band. But it was better. It really was. The audience seems to have grown up with us. Some are even bringing their kids. You know, a lot of young people there. And
In 1980, he's talking about his fans bringing their kids in 1980, because they started in 67, so 77. That's only 13 years after they started.
Mm-hmm.
They must have been babies.
Yeah, they
couldn't have. Yeah.
I mean, I'm 57, and I was born in 65.
Yeah.
So you figure another 10 years maybe or so. Yeah. They're now in their mid-40s.
And I saw him the last time he was here in St. Louis at River City Casino, and people had their great-great-great-great-great-grandkids with them.
To be a much wider audience now, whereas before it was definitely confined to a sort of hippie kind of, but nice, lovely people kind of audience, but of a particular age group. But now it's really wide and right across the board.
To see that change come about in the age of people who are listening to your music has got to be a rewarding thing. When it spans from 40 years old to 8 years old, that's got to be something.
Well, a lot of 8-year-old Moody Blues fanatics.
You know, we're a band, and I personally receive an incredible amount of mail. I think it's the kind of music where people...
Mail? What's that?
Yeah. You have mail.
Feel that they can put down their thoughts in writing and send a letter to you. Mm-hmm. And often don't ask for replies, you know, because they just want to tell you how they feel. And from those letters, I get so many from young kids like 13 and 14 years old who say, well, I've just bought Night Flight.
I've just gotten into drugs, and I'm just wondering, tell me some of the meanings of these.
What's your favorite one?
Yeah, what do you mean, from our children's 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 children? I don't get it.
Or Octave or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I've realized what a past you have, you know, and now I'm saving up to buy Days of Future Past and see where it all started from.
Exactly.
It's amazing.
Let's get back to some music now. Moody Blues for lunch today. Just
because I have no more questions.
And Hayward is in the
everything
studio.
Everything is more.
Live at KSHE. Name of the song is The Story in Your Eyes.
Ooh, good one. All right, we'll be editing here.
This is KSHE 95. We started going to Knights and White Satin there, Justin. We'll hold off on that one until close to the end, okay? We're speaking with Justin Hayward. This is KSHE 95. And we'll speak more with Justin, as he's here for lunch today after these words.
Everyone in the senior class.
Duck the check-in on box office or dial 6-5-6-9-0-500. You will offer no resistance.
Queen.
Queen tickets available at all the regular ticket outlets.
The real Queen.
Wow. That's neat.
In the studio with me now is Justin Hayward of the Moody Blues. Justin is in town on a promotional tour for his new LP, so it's nothing like a concert or anything like that. The last song we played, Justin, was called Melancholy Man, written by Michael Pinder, who's no longer
with the
band.
Yeah. No, Mike's a dear friend. I miss Mike very much, actually, because his songs I always enjoyed doing most. He was my favorite, really. Mm-hmm. But I could see during the making of the Octave album that he wasn't feeling the same about it as everyone else was.
What do you mean?
He just didn't... some people's priorities... My priority is always music, number one. Mm-hmm. And I think his priorities changed. Ever since the Moody split, I think he drifted further away from it than anybody else.
He wanted to become a poem group, because he did most of the readings of
that guy did?
Yeah. Michael Pinder's the vocal, doing the reading, the speaking part in...
Breathe Deep.
Yeah.
He did that part?
Yeah, that was Michael Pinder, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, just away from the Moody scene or from music,
away
period?
Away from the Moody scene and music, period. Mm-hmm. And... it's a shame. I miss him very much. He's a very talented man. But I have to respect that other people have different priorities in life and want to do different things. Mm-hmm. And so after Octave, he only had one song on Octave and wasn't there for most of the time. Mm-hmm. But and then after that, he really decided that he didn't really want to do it anymore. and which is where we started with Patrick, and Patrick Moraes is now a fully-fledged member of the band and working with us on the new album.
Is Michael Pinder doing anything?
Not that I know of. I spoke to him quite recently, but he didn't talk about anything musical that he was doing. Mm-hmm. He lives in Hawaii now. As a matter
he was breathing deep.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
He lives in Hawaii.
Why'd you have to tell us that, Justin? Winter's coming, you're telling us that Michael Pinder's in Hawaii. Okay.
little humor.
Good
luck. Made me laugh.
Yeah, really.
I miss him very much, you know, but like I say, I can respect his attitude and his point of view.
Mm-hmm. And John Lodge?
John's fine. He's working in the studio, of course, on the new Moody's. Everybody's mm-hmm. doing their own different things as well. And I know Ray Thomas has got some things in the can.
You put out an LP.
Ray Thomas passed away last year and a half or so, yeah. 2 years, something like that. Mm-hmm.
John Lodge.
That's right. We had an album together right after the Moody split called Blue Jays, which I enjoyed very much.
Mm-hmm. I love that album. Mm. Got two Casey classics to come off of that. I Dreamed last night and I can't think of the other one off the top of my head.
And we toured with that. I enjoyed that whole exercise very much.
Mm-hmm. Graham
Everybody,
Edge.
Yeah, Graham's had a couple of solo albums out. I don't think Graham's done anything on his own right now, but I enjoyed Graham's albums a lot. You know, they were so different. They were so different to anything in the Moody Blues that I could really, they were the one set of albums from other guys that in the band that I could really be set myself apart from and listen to constructively. Mm-hmm.
It didn't sound like the Moody Blues, is what
you're
saying.
No, exactly.
We still play at Paradise Ballroom.
Oh,
that
yeah.
was a pretty big hit here.
Yeah, it was a good album.
Radio. And
remember that song? Paradise Ballroom, Paradise Ballroom.
No. Especially the way you sing it. No.
One other guy, Ray Thomas.
Ray's doing things on his own, and he's got, like I say, he's got a couple of things in the can, and he's...
Didn't I ask about Ray Thomas once already?
Then he mentioned Ray Thomas, I think.
Okay.
Living down in Wales now, right in the west of England, mm-hmm. and sort of commuting backwards and forwards while we've been recording.
He's killing whales. I'll be damned. That'd be a horror. Wow. What a change of professions.
Yeah.
And, of course, Patrick is very prolific on solo work, and he's had a couple of records out on Charisma, and he's just released an album with a guy who plays panpipes, which is beautiful.
Panpipes? Vavaz, you got any panpipes?
I'm like... doing air drumming to panpipes.
They double as a frying pan and some sort of a musical instrument. You blow into the handle, I think.
I think he's one of those, you know, he's kind of a workaholic and he never stops working. He's always doing jazz festivals on his own all over the world
mm-hmm.
and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Jazz pan flute festivals.
Hmm. We have pretty well covered things that are happening with the Moody Blues right now.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your solo LP now.
Yeah, sure.
And this is the third one for you? Second one.
Well, this is the second solo. Of course, if you count Blue Jays, then it's three. But this is the second solo album.
I don't.
And, of course, the War of the Worlds thing as well.
You're the only one.
It's a duet. It's not a solo album.
It's kind of in between.
What do you try to do different on solo albums that you don't do with the Moody Blues, if you try to do anything different?
Well, I do. I mean, the songs that I write for it are basically the same. I mean, I wouldn't make a difference between a Joss Hayward solo song and a Moody Blues song. They're the same things to me.
Interesting.
Record the songs that I've written most recently. But I think the biggest difference with Night Flight is the style of recording. With the Moody's, we usually do what we call recording blind, where we just have a song, say, and apply it to the other guys, and then we work it out in the studio. Mm-hmm. Whereas with Night Flight, we really prepared everything up front, and as much of the arrangement was written down as we could think of, and it was an excellent way of working. In fact, the latest things we've been doing with the Moody's in the studio.
Prepared versus unprepared.
Yeah. There's got to be that fine line in there.
Yeah.
There's got to be room for that spontaneity and the adrenaline that comes from that.
Right.
You know, great things can come out of that.
Yeah.
More towards that style, and it leaves a lot more space for the vocals. The vocals are done a lot early on, and to bring that voice through, you know, sometimes the criticism that's been leveled at me in the past is that I've tended to over-record and make a huge sort of blanket backing track and try and squeeze the voice on top somewhere. But this time there's plenty of space and the voice was recorded very early on in the session and things were done to complement around the voice.
What about negative reviews? Does that bother you, Justin?
Fortunately, Night Flight didn't get any negative reviews. It's got good reviews all the way around.
I'm perfect, John. Yes, why the fuck did you ask that question?
Why would you question my perfection, you asshole?
But No, I think even if nobody comes to your concerts and nobody buys the record, if you do what you believe is right and you believe in it, then you'll always have that peace of mind. You'll always say, well, I believed in it, you know. And whereas it's worse if you're doing something for a commercial reason and something that you may not believe in. I don't know whether there's quite that satisfaction if it's a success.
Which I heard him say is how he felt initially about being a part of that War of the Worlds project and the song Forever Autumn came out of that.
Oh.
Initially, he didn't want to get involved in it because of the commercial aspect of it. But he got talked into it, and he says he's glad he did.
Yeah. I think we all
try to engineer it around a particular sound or a trend, you know.
Let's say this. Let's say Justin Hayward had not had a lot of success with the Moody Blues and had not had a lot of success with the past solo efforts and the War of the Worlds thing.
Yeah.
And the record company came to you and said, well, Justin, man, you're just not cutting it. And we'd really like to keep you on the label. And the only way to keep you on the label is if you produce us a top 40 hit.
Yeah.
Would Justin Hayward say yes?
That's very hard to do because, like, I've had a lot of top 40 hits, but you can never plan them up front. They're just records, and some catch on as singles and some don't, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The strangest ones catch on. I remember after Nights in White Satin, you may know it actually, there was an album out that none of us were too happy with a couple of years ago called Court Live Plus Five, which was a very bad live concert that we did in 1969.
Mm-hmm.
And we never intended it for release, but it was put out. And
I think I might have that at home.
Really?
Yeah.
It was five tracks on the back of that album, which was the Plus Five. It's called Court Live Plus Five, which were five attempts that we made to actually make a top 40 type of single record to follow up Nights in White Satin, because everybody says, you've got to have another one of them Nights in White Satins, you know. Like, and we made five attempts at it. None of them gave us any real satisfaction when we recorded them at all.
Huh.
And you can't do it that way. You have those things happen by lucky sort of accident.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe in trying to plan them.
So then the answer would be no.
The answer would be no. I'd have to stick by my guns, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's listen to the title track off the new Justin Hayward solo LP. That song is called Night Flight, and that's also the name, again, of the LP. This is 95 FM.
Disco period was popular back then.
Yeah.
You're tuned to KC95 Real Rock Radio
label.
For St. Louis and in the studio.
That's what we did back then. People would call and jump on you if you talked over the end of a song the beginning.
It's happened to me with CDs.
Yeah.
Justin Hayward and the Moody Blues. Justin is here in town to promote his new solo LP. And the name of it is Night Flight, and the song you just heard was Night Flight. And the horns sound a little different with your voice, Justin.
Yeah, that's right. It's an interesting arrangement, you know. It was a fascinating song to do, that Night Flight. I've never really worked with horns before.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two numbers on this album, this and a song called I'm Sorry, which have got a lot of horns on. And it was a great session. It really was. I really enjoyed it. You know, there's one of those few recording sessions I've been to when, because horn players are pretty aloof kind of people. They're a special breed all unto themselves.
When you say horn players, what do you mean?
Well, anybody plays, you know, like sax or trumpet or trombone.
Oh, horn players.
Horn players.
Well, I thought you said home. I'm sorry.
Horn. Oh, okay. No. Horn players.
My hearing was going back then. Wow. That was only 20.
Well, you still have it, though.
I was only 23 years old.
And they're a pretty unique bunch of people.
It's that southern accent, you know.
Is it?
Yeah.
All right.
More humor.
What else is going on?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And anyway, it's one of the first sessions I've ever worked with brass players. Let's call them brass players. Where they've actually come into the control room and dug it, you know, instead of listening for a playback. Usually they just do this session, thanks very much, and see you next time, you know, and go home.
Uh-huh.
But these guys actually came up to the control room and had a listen. I was knocked out.
It seems to me that horn players, brass players.
I hear that St. Louis.
Horn.
Horn player.
You got it out, didn't you?
Yeah. I didn't get rid of ARs over ORs until, I guess I was about 30.
I don't think my father ever did. I don't think he
never
ever did.
Never figured it out.
No.
Huh? Yeah.
Mm-mm. Didn't care.
My mom, too, to this day.
Yeah, pretty much.
And instead of corner, she says Connor.
Connor.
Go around the corner.
Hmm.
Okay, yeah.
Are somewhat difficult to control because you get a guy in the studio with a horn, and you know, he just goes at it and
keeps on going.
You got to tap him on the shoulder and say, hey, you know, can I sing?
Well, there was one, I don't know whether you remember, but on the Octave album, there was a guy that I had in to work on a couple of my numbers called Bobby Martin, who is a brass player. He works with a band called Orleans.
Sure.
And we were doing one thing on a song called
Top Rank Suite, and we worked that out and fine. And then he said, well, I'd love to hear the other stuff you're doing. So I said, sure, and I played him a song that we'd done called Driftwood. Mm-hmm. And he said, oh, he said, listen, he said, I'd just like to just play along with that for pleasure. So he went into the studio and we set a mic up and he played sax along with it. And it was ace. The first time through, it was absolutely fantastic. And anyway, we had the red light on and we took it, you know.
Oh, fantastic.
And at the end of it, he said, well, he said, maybe I could do something proper on that. And I said, you just did it. You know, let's just leave it like that. The inspiration was right there, straight off the top of his head. Some of them are very... a lot of brass players, you know, think they should be into jazz and they don't get off much on rock and roll records.
Yeah,
but it's a fascinating instrument to play, you know.
Really. I have to listen to that song again and listen for the sax now that I know the story.
Yeah.
Driftwood, mm-hmm. he said.
It was ace.
It was a song. Yeah, it was ace.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Justin Hayward and we'll talk more with him after these words.
Hey!
Levi's moving on jeans for guys with a fashion.
Progressive, what's happening now, jeans.
Levi's moving on jeans.
This is KSHE Radio. We're back.
Kind of cool to hear those old commercials.
Yeah, I wonder if they were bell bottoms at all.
Yeah, they were probably. Yeah.
Justin Hayward, he's in the studio with us.
Really tight.
Of course.
Yeah.
As we have the Moody Blues and solo Justin Hayward efforts for lunch today. The Moody Blues, and you did a lot of writing, obviously, for the Moody Blues, and you do all the writing for your new solo LPs. When you wrote for the Moody Blues way back when, you never really wrote about things that were happening at that time. You wrote about different things, positive things, as opposed to all the negative things that were going on.
Yeah.
And today you write about Night Flight, and you write about things again that don't necessarily fit with what's happening today, which is good because I think you need that release. What do you feel about that?
Well, I feel I'm
what did I mean by that question?
Where were you going with that? I have no idea.
Well, I think as I was saying that he's not topical.
Oh.
That they aren't topical. They write about mysterious things mm-hmm. and things that are kind of out of the normal realm of life.
You feel a duty to the
I should have asked that question.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now you can rephrase it.
Hey, Justin, can you come back in 2022 and I'll be able to rephrase this question and get it right?
...of people that I'm writing for. I'm aware of the audience that I have because, as we said before, I get so many letters from them and I know what kind of people they are.
Mm-hmm.
And in the old days, we had a lot to shout about. We didn't make any money for an awful long time. Mm-hmm. You know, we got ripped off very badly. And we really had a lot to say and a lot to shout. And we went through a lot of sort of religious and even psychedelic experiences as a band. And
psychedelic experiences.
What does that mean, Justin?
Now, really, I make music for people who want to listen maybe late at night to an album, you know, and can put it on, play it right the way through. And they want to be taken away and entertained, you know, and... it's a relief.
For not knowing the question, he answered it.
He sure did.
An escape kind of thing. I don't really want to beat anyone over the head with it anymore. You know, I'm very much in love. I'm writing music. I'm in love myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm writing music for people that are in love. I mean, it may sound corny, but
it
means something to me, you know. And those are the kind of people I want to write music for.
Do you take a different approach today than you did 10 years ago?
No, I don't really. I've never really tried to analyze how you write a song. I think that's dangerous. I just try and let it flow, you know, because it's a marvelous, it really is a marvelous experience. It's better than dope or meditation or anything, songwriting, because it's something from nothing, you know. It's something.
Yeah, I can't imagine doing it. To me, it's a gift. Somebody has a gift to be able to write.
Oh, to write a song?
Oh,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Didn't exist before.
It's a creation.
You create, yeah. And the feeling afterwards when you've written a good song, you know, what you consider to be a good song. You know, I just walk around in the middle of the night for hours afterwards saying thank you up there, somebody, you know, because mm-hmm. it's such an exhilarating feeling.
When did you know that you had talent enough to make records and to become somewhat of a success in the music business?
I believed that. I mean, everybody wants... I was a professional musician when I was 16, as soon as I left school. And I left school at 16, and I was straight into the music business then. I was a professional guitar player with a rock and roll singer in England right then.
Mm-hmm.
But from the age of about 9, as soon as I heard Buddy Holly, and he was it for me. And then from there on, I thought that's exactly what I want to be. I want to be a songwriter and a singer and a guitar player. And you convince yourself that you've got the talent. First and foremost, you have to believe in yourself.
Exactly.
Because, you know, if you don't, it shows. And if there's a flaw in it, people will spot it and point it out, you know.
Now, keep in mind, this was live on the air. This is a mm-hmm. long interview on the air.
Mm-hmm.
But also keep in mind that at this time, the Moody Blues were superstars.
They were. It was a big deal.
Yeah, having this guy in the studio was a big deal.
Yeah, it sure was.
And it changed the thing. If you had to do it all over again, you'd do it the exact same way.
Oh, yeah, sure.
What were some of the high points of your career, the 13 years that you've been with the Moody Blues?
We're talking like he's been doing it for like decades, you know. Mm-hmm. 13 years back then seemed like such
nothing.
A long time,
yeah,
but it's really nothing. It was a blink of an eye in terms of their careers.
I think the first high point really was in 1967 when we played the Fillmore West in San Francisco for Bill Graham. I think that I really thought then, cool, this is a great scene, you know, they've got going here, and we're part of it and part of that whole sound and that whole music. And I think
which I think is torn down, doesn't exist anymore, mm-hmm. Fillmore West.
Particularly, probably the next one was ambitions are funny things. It's hard to say that your ambitions, because you know what it's like. You have something, a goal that you set yourself, and then when you reach it, you don't even realize you've reached it and gone past it. You know, mm-hmm. you don't even think about it when you're doing it. But another great moment when it really came home to me was at Madison Square Garden in New York. We did two shows there. For the first time we played there was in 72. And between shows, I was sitting in the dressing room, and it suddenly hit me where I was. You know, this is Madison Square Gardens, and there's 28,000 people out there who come to see us, and it really came home to me. And I can remember it so clearly, sitting in that dressing room, looking into my suitcase, you know.
After you reach highs like that, when you go to other cities that may not be as big as New York City, that may not have a Madison Square Garden...
I think the Moody Blues were always really mm-hmm. well received here in St. Louis.
They were, but not as big as it was.
Oh, yeah.
You have the same electric feeling in your blood.
You do. You can never tell, really, until you get up on stage what kind of gig it is going to be. You know, sometimes you go into the hall in the afternoon and you think, oh, this looks like a real dump, and you're not really sort of looking forward to it. But when you walk out there and you see those people, and like they're only there for one reason. There's nobody that's going to come to boo you or throw anything, you know. Mm-hmm. They're there because they want you to do it for them. They want you to perform well. They want you to sing, you know, and soar and reach the heights. And you get that feeling straight back from them. And there's been very few gigs that I can remember that I haven't really enjoyed.
We're speaking with Justin Hayward of the Moody Blues, and he's joined us for lunch today at KC95. Let's hear some more
the second time I couldn't say the name of the band.
Yeah, how funny is that?
We're having a rough time with the name today. More Moody Blues on KC95.
Well, you're only 23, John.
Yeah, I was still learning. Yeah. Sure, 23.
This is KC95. We're speaking with Justin Hayward today for lunch, as we also listen to Moody Blues music and Justin Hayward's solo music. More with Justin after these. This is KC95, and, I got to say this before I continue with the interview here. I'm anxious today. Specially priced tickets at $6 and $7 are on sale at Backstage Records, Spectrum, All Three Peaches, Co-op Records.
Wonder what show.
Lame Duck.
Wonder what show.
I don't know.
Records, the Kiel Box Office, or call Dialtix 569-0500. Tickets for Eddie Money. And one other quick thing
Money,
here.
$6 or $7.
1980.
Wow.
Yeah. His first album came out,
78? Yeah, he was popular by then. Yeah.
I think it was just 2 years. Yeah. His first album. I think his first album was 78. Could be wrong. 77, 78, something like that.
Get your licks at the Ice Cream and Arts Festival. 3 full days of fun, lots of arts activities, and ice cream delicacies. Labor Day weekend, Laclede's Landing. Good old Lewis. Well, that hamburger went down quick there, Justin.
Yes.
Just a quick inhale.
Very nice.
It's gone. Mm-hmm. Okay. we're really running out of time fast here. I can do this 5-6 hours a day for a week.
Hamburgers are not something that they normally would eat in England, right? Especially back in those days. There were,
totally.
Yeah.
But I remember being in Paris, and we asked the guy who drove us to the Eiffel Tower, like, you know, what's your favorite American food? Hamburgers.
Yeah.
I'd get tired of it. Is it still fun for you, Justin?
It's a pleasure, yeah. If it wasn't fun, I wouldn't do it.
You still get excited about getting on stage and going in the studio?
Oh, yeah.
Do you still have to practice?
I'm a compulsive guitar player, so I practice anyway. I mean, I do it for pleasure. Mm-hmm. I play guitar for fun. Not right now, because I haven't got a guitar with me, but all the time I'm at home, I've always got a guitar, and I've got a beautiful collection of guitars, actually. I love to collect them as well. And I play for my own pleasure, you know, just for my own therapy and relaxation.
For hours and hours and hours, I bet.
Yeah, I just enjoy it, you know.
Like some people read, you play guitar.
Yeah, that's right.
As you look back over the last 13 years, I asked you if you would do anything different already.
Mm-hmm.
You
answered, don't ask that again.
for that question. But as you look back at the past 13 years, what do you think?
He might have been smoking. Did you hear that?
Smoking or he was sighing.
Yeah, like, when is this thing going to be over?
Oh, fuck. Yeah. Come on.
Think of yourself as a person, how you've changed since, you know, that first Moody Blues record or the first time you picked up a guitar, if you want to go that far back.
I used to be pretty cocky, I remember that, you know, and he used to tell a lot of people where to get off. And I think with experience and time, you know, you learn how to handle people and the right way to handle yourself. Mm-hmm. And also being in a band is kind of like that anyway. It makes you a bit that way because, I mean, a band is like brothers, you know, and it's like, we're like Moody's are like family, you know, and I think there's a certain rules and a certain language within a band, and it's good for you, you know, and you learn a lot about life just being with other guys. It's like the pack, you know, like the wolf instinct, you know.
And traveling around the different countries, you play all over the world.
I think
that
I've
has
been
to
most
have an
places.
Effect also, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. So I keep coming back to the, I keep coming back to England because I love it, mm-hmm. and I feel comfortable there. I write easily there. I can make records easily there, and so I'll always go back there to live. The only place I haven't been is South America, and I think we're due to go there next year.
Are you?
Yeah.
That seems to me like that part of the world gets ignored quite a bit.
Yeah, it does. Mind you, they're pretty crazy. I mean, Patrick, our keyboard player, is Brazilian. And, I mean, they've got inflation there of 120%, would you believe? It's absolutely incredible.
Amazing.
And there's always been a lot of problems with records in the music business. A lot of people never got paid out of South America. They very rarely pay any royalties. Mm. But we're putting together a deal now where it should be okay, because I know that there's people there who want to see the band.
When you first came to America, America was real good to you, weren't they?
Oh, yeah, it really was. Better than Great Britain. I mean, we slapped up and down the M1 in England, you know, for years without anybody really taking much notice. And I think our success in Great Britain was really a bounce back from America. Or they suddenly started reading it in Rolling Stone and the Melody Maker about the Moody's in America. Mm-hmm. And the British people became aware of the band really through America.
Critics back then, when you came to America, were they saying it's the second coming of the Beatles, and kind of compared you to the Beatles?
We were from that same era, and we did get compared. I mean, we used to copy the Beatles and everything they did. You know, we formed our own record label just after
influences,
they formed.
You can't help it.
Yeah, that's right. Just after they formed Apple, and we always looked to them and you know, for leadership. Mm-hmm. But in the early days,
yeah, their record label was Threshold Records. I remember that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you know. I don't know, what was the question?
People compare you to the Beatles when you first came to America from we were talking about you coming to America.
Well, in the early days, really, of us in America, we were kind of an underground band.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of people loved us because we had that particular tag on us. You know, there was never sort of Moody Mania Week or anything like that, you know, and it was never an instant success. It was a very long, sort of slow success story, which I think helped us adjust, and maybe we didn't fall into the same traps in the end that the Beatles fell into. You know, it happened very quick for them. And when you look back now, it was they were only really together for six very short years. Really?
Exactly. When you look at the music scene today and what's being put out today, what do you think?
I'm very proud of Great Britain because I hope I'm not upsetting anybody, but I still think that Great Britain right now is leading the world in music.
Because power pop was a thing that was happening right in that time period, you know?
Some of the stuff that's coming out of there is so strong. Mm-hmm. And
punk. I think punk was, you know...
Punk was a few years earlier, but...
Yeah, but it was starting to really take off and become a force in the music business.
But it goes in cycles like that. You know, next year it'll be America, something new will happen here, and kick it along. I think it's always healthy. I thought the whole new wave thing was very healthy, to be quite honest.
New wave, you know, power
new
pop,
wave.
New wave, a similar thing.
It came at a time when the business needed a good kick up the backside, and that's exactly what it got. And it's brought music back to the young people again, which is, you know, which is where it all started. That's right.
Really. What do you see in the future for yourself, Justin?
Well, like I said, we're doing a new Moody's album right now, and that should be finished about the end of November. We'll be touring here with the new album, which should be out sort of beginning of March. So we'll be here, I should think, March, April next year. Mm-hmm. And we're still waiting for Stanley Kubrick to ask us to do the music for his new film. Uh-huh. And we're still out here, Stanley, if you're listening. But I'm also doing a concert of the War of the Worlds. We're doing a week in a London theatre in May of next year. Mm-hmm. With the War of the Worlds as a whole audio kind of visual sort of evening on stage. And hopefully I can be part of that when it comes here too. I think that would be a unique kind of show. And like I said, we've got a week in London planned and a few other cities in England. And hopefully we can bring it to America.
Sounds like you keep busy.
Oh, yeah.
Good luck to you. And I tell you, it's been a blast having you in the studio. Like I said to you off the air, back when Seven Sojourn came out, my brother and I listened to the tape every day. I had no idea I'd be sitting here eating Steak and Shake with you someday.
I was going to say, the hamburger probably that he had was a Steak and Shake hamburger.
Yeah.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'd like to say thanks to all the people from around St. Louis who write and everything, and the letters get read. And hello to all my friends in this area, and thanks for everything.
Fantastic. Justin Hayward, take care, and you're going to Atlanta right now,
That's
said?
That's right, yeah.
And yes. We're looking forward to seeing you when you come to good old St. Louis with the Moody Blues.
Great.
All right?
Me too.
This is another song off the LP Night Flight, Justin Hayward's solo album. It's called Another Face in the Crowd on KC95. Thank you very much, Justin.
My pleasure.
Somebody threw up in the bathroom.
That'll be $1.09.
Come on.
This is KC95 doing the best that we can to bring you the best of old and new music on 95FM.
Yeah.
You just heard an hour and 25 minutes of the Moody Blues and Justin Hayward live in the studio and on record. And the name of the new Justin Hayward LP is Night Flight, and we'd like to thank Justin Hayward for stopping by KC Radio today on his quick promotional tour, stopping at a few cities around the U.S., and St. Louis happened to be one of them, and we're very proud to have had him in our studios today. Lunch was brought to you by St. Louis Photo.
All right. Well.
Ooh, that was a long one.
That was a long donger.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, man. You know, I was at the end there when I was talking about listening to the Seventh Sojourn album over mm-hmm. and over in 72, 73 with my brother. That was one of the few albums that we owned. Because we didn't, you know, you just didn't go to the music store, record store at the drop of a hat, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We took public transportation when we traveled in the city. Or we were on our bikes, one of the two. So to get to a record store was a big deal and have an album. And we played the hell out of that thing. And it just brought back memories of sitting in that bedroom on 18th Street, mm-hmm. my brother and I with our little turntable thing set up there and just digging the shit out of that album. And then here I am talking to the guy. Just,
it's crazy.
Awesome.
I know. You had one of those moments.
Yeah.
It was
weird. Yeah. All right. You can follow me on Twitter, STLUMAN. And on Instagram, I'm Johnny Hewlett.
Favaz, I'll see you. AMF.
Bye.
The KC Tapes with U-Man and Favaz. For more on the history of KC, go to KC95.com or the KC mobile app.